puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time for Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsborough. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
What are we talking about this week?
Well, some say that Canadian history is boring because we lack the wildly colorful characters that Hollywood would have us believe American history is full of. Well, personally, I think we Canadians simply haven't done enough to draw attention to the many weird and wonderful people of our past. So today, I present to our listeners a collection of 10 interesting characters, any of whom I think would be the subject of a movie, well, or at least maybe a YouTube video.
Okay, let's start with the first one, Frank Cornish.
Right. He was born in Ontario. He came to Winnipeg in 1872, so quite early. And in that year's federal election, he led a group of Ontario immigrants who were angry that they were not permitted to vote because they had not lived here long enough to meet the residency requirement. He incited the mob to violence. And, well, one of the things I really love is that he called the chief of police, and this is a direct quote, a toad-eating communist. And they vandalized the offices of the three newspapers, thought to be sympathetic to the federal government. But what's maybe most interesting is that this wild and colorful character in 1873 became Winnipeg's first mayor.
I love that toad-eating communist. Which part of that is more offensive at the time? Very good. Okay, so the next one is George Hamm from 1847 to 1926.
Right, and you know, journalists figure prominently in this list too. And I don't know whether that's a statement about journalism in general, but yeah, he began working as a journalist in Winnipeg in 1875. And again, quite early. And at that time, newspapers were highly partisan. They made no pretense. And they would launch vicious attacks on people of other political persuasions. Well, in 1891, George Hamm became the advertising manager of the Canadian Pacific Railway. In other words, his job was to travel all over the place promoting the CPR, telling people they should use the CPR to get around. And he is said to have crossed the Atlantic Ocean at least twice a year. He visited every state in the USA. He visited countries in the Caribbean. And then finally, I think, just to give you an idea of his mindset, in 1921, he wrote his autobiography. It was titled Reminiscences of a Raconteur. And if you want to know what that means, it's somebody who's a very colorful character who spins a really good story.
Now, while we're on the subject of colorful journalists, we should mention Garnet Porter, 1866 to 1945.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, here's one of the rare cases where we have an American who came to Canada in 1906 to become the editor of one of the newspapers here, the Winnipeg Telegram. One of the many anecdotes was that infamous murderer Jack Kravchenko, who Porter had described in one of his articles as, quote, a crook. Apparently, Kravchenko took offense at that, and he showed up at the newspaper office and confronted Porter with a drawn pistol. And of course, that could have turned out very badly, but apparently Porter complimented Kravchenko on his pistol, said, oh, what a nice-looking pistol. And as Kravchenko looked down to admire it himself, Porter whipped out another pistol out of his drawer, because, of course, everybody keeps a pistol in their desk drawer, and he held Kravchenko at bay until the police arrived. So there you go. I can't imagine a more colorful incident.
Next on the list is Ed Russenholt, born in 1890, died in 1991.
Yep. Again, another journalist, although he also, like George Hamm, worked in publicity for a variety of entities like Winnipeg Hydro, Manitoba Hydro, Ducks Unlimited. That's where I first ran into him because he was widely known for his advocacy for that organization and the Canadian Wheat Board. But he's probably best known to Manitobans as the first weatherman on television station CBWT, of course, the CBC today. And his signature line when he was doing his weather forecast was, yes, the heart of the continent, when he referred to Manitoba. And in fact, he subsequently wrote a book with that same title. He was known as a unique storyteller, and his talents brought listeners usually to either laughter or tears, and sometimes both. He wrote many memorable books of Manitoba history, and I think one of the more well-known journalists of the 20th century.
And we would be remiss not to mention journalist and author James Gray, 1906 to 1998.
And I think a lot of people have read his books through the years. Later years, he lived in Alberta, but you may not know that he was actually born here in Manitoba in Whitemouth. He worked at various newspapers. He was a journalist for much of his early career, but he took early retirement in 1963 to focus on books with numerous wonderful anecdotes, but a couple of the highlights for me anyway was 1967's Red Lights on the Prairies about prostitution and other forms of bad behavior. And the one I like, I think my absolute favorite, is one called simply Booze from 1972 about the role played by whiskey and other alcoholic beverages in Western Canadian history.
Who was Fightin' Joe Martin, born in 1852?
Another interesting character, studied law in Ontario before he arrived in Portes-la-Prairie in 1882, where he set up a law practice. But he acquired his nickname, Fightin' Joe, due to his pugnacious personality and his tendency to want to settle arguments with his fists. He was described, and this is a direct quote, as suspicious in nature and with a capacity for pettiness. He would be known throughout his career for his feisty, combative spirit. Now, what's interesting, I think, about Martin in particular is that he first became a politician after winding up his law practice in 1883, and he served as Manitoba's Attorney General, our Lands Commissioner, and our Railway Commissioner. But then he jumped to federal politics in 1893 as the Member of Parliament for Winnipeg. Defeated in 1896, he moved to Vancouver, where, I guess he just had politics in his blood, he entered the provincial legislature and served briefly as the Premier of BC. But he wasn't finished, because he moved to England, where in 1910, he became a British MP, sitting until 1918. So I don't know if there's any others that can claim this, but I think this must be some kind of record where he sat in four legislative bodies, two of them provincial, Manitoba and BC, two of them federal, Canada and the UK. And I'd be suspicious if there's anyone who can claim that record.
Next on the list is E.P. Leacock, born in 1853. Who's that?
Well, he came from Manitoba. He came to Manitoba in 1879. He made a fortune in the Winnipeg land boom that occurred between 1881 and 1882. But like most other people in the land boom, he subsequently lost it. But he managed to carry on a, this is a good quote again, hotel credit, borrowed loans, and unpaid bills. In other words, he's a bit of a scoundrel that way. Among the things that he built, because there's actually at least a couple of buildings that he has known for, is a 23-room home that overlooks the Red River. And today it's owned by the social agency Marymount. And by the way, the organization tried a few years ago to demolish the building, but so far they've been thwarted by the fact that it is designated as a municipally significant historic building. But then Leacock entered politics. 1882, he represented the constituency of Birtle in western Manitoba, and he built another large home there. And actually, I had a chance to walk around inside that home a few years ago. In the end, he retired to the UK, where he lived as Colonel Leacock of the Northwest Mounted Police. But as far as anyone knows, he never served in the police. But, you know, the reason why we know so much about him and the fact that that quote, hotel credit and so on, because he was immortalized in a 1942 book called My Remarkable Uncle and Other Sketches, written by his nephew, one of my absolute favorite authors, Canadian humorist, Stephen Leacock.
Next on the list is Mel McMullen, born in 1903, but he may be better known by his stage name.
That's right. He was known as Len Vintas, and he was the first president of IBM. And if you're thinking that's the company that makes business equipment, no, it actually stands for the International Brotherhood of Magicians, which is the world's largest organization for both professional and amateur magicians. Now, going back to McMullen, he was intrigued as a child by the magicians he saw performing in, you know, his neighborhood. And so when he was in his early 20s, he established IBM with offices in the old Union Bank building, the one that stands right beside Winnipeg's City Hall. He performed a ventriloquism act and a magic while managing a lumberyard. In other words, magic wasn't his main gig. He had to support his family selling lumber, but he wrote a number of books. He served as a counselor and school trustee in Transcona, but is worldwide known for his advocacy on behalf of magic.
And we do have a woman on this list. Who was Gladys Balsillie?
Well, I think she's one of the more colorful people on this list. She opened a restaurant on Main Street here in Winnipeg in 1961. And she tended bar at the restaurant. But after the restaurant closed in 67, well, she had to support herself. So she set up a bartending school. She also began booking go-go dancers for Winnipeg hotels because, of course, this was the late 60s. Go-go was popular. But she became known as Winnipeg's Queen of Burlesque because she began managing exotic dancers. Of course, the ones that would maybe remove some of their clothing. She found them gigs at 45 Winnipeg hotels. In fact, had a virtual monopoly on exotic dancing in the city. And in fact, what's interesting too is that she didn't have any particular preferences. In 1980, she introduced the city's first male exotic dancers. She was known for her flamboyant style, but she was nevertheless a very devout Catholic, and she insisted that all her performers sign contracts forbidding drug use and prostitution.
And finally, we have Dan Ritchie, born in 1924, died in 2011.
Right. This is our most recent one. Moved to Winnipeg in the 1950s and operated a chain of seven restaurants known as the Millionaire Drive-Ins. And some of our listeners may remember that one. After providing catering service for a short time to the cruise ships on the Red River, he decided to get into the business himself. He commissioned the construction of two cruise ships, the River Rouge and the Lady Winnipeg, and he took to calling himself Commodore Ritchie, although he had no training to operate a ship. If the captain had suddenly become ill, he couldn't have taken over, but it was part of his shtick, I suppose, to call himself that. He later built a fleet of English-style double-decker buses to take tourists around Winnipeg, and I'm sure there's people who remember those, and always a bit flamboyant. Known for, well, let's say questionable personal hygiene and bordering on eccentric, in later years, Ritchie developed an animal sanctuary in a former gravel quarry. So there you have it. 10 unusual characters, I think, amply deserve the term. And what it tells us is that we just haven't done a good enough job telling people about some of these interesting folks.
Interesting, unusual, all great ways of describing these characters. Thanks for this, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, I have to say, I may receive hate mail for saying this, but I have to wonder if the sport of curling is on the verge of abandonment. You know, here we are talking about abandoned Manitoba, and I have to ask, is the roaring game coming to a whimpering end? That'll be our discussion next week.
Starting some controversy here on the Weekend Morning Show.
Might be.
Thanks, Gordon.
Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.